A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. It's easy to look at something without noticing it. For instance, you've seen a buffalo nickel thousands of times. Which way is the buffalo facing? Now, here's one that's more important. Every day, you look at your car's speedometer. How many miles does it total? How long since your last chassis lubrication? If you've gone 1,000 miles, that's the danger signal. See your Amoco man for Amoco-approved lubrication. It saves you money in the long run because it saves your car. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. Another of the many messages involved in the Korean truce talks has been sent and received. The Communist High Command a short time ago guaranteed safe conduct for General Matthew Ridgway's preliminary ceasefire party, and that party is now making preparations to leave Seoul for Kaesong, where the talks will begin day after tomorrow, United States time, Sunday in Korea. News of the Communist acceptance came in a broadcast by the Beiping radio, heard by Army monitors in Tokyo. It said the Chinese and North Korean commanders also accepted General Ridgway's request that two interpreters accompany the three colonels and a major who will make up the preliminary truce party. Those three colonels are said to be one from the Marines, one from the Air Force or Army, one from the South Korean forces, and a United States Army major to act as coordinator. The Reds have suggested the party travel by jeep rather than by helicopter, as had been planned by Ridgway. Scattered fighting continues at points along the 100-mile Korean front, although 8th Army officers say the Chinese seem to show little determination in holding their ground defenses. The Pentagon today announces new casualty figures, 78,110. That's an increase of 1,361 over last week's report. And based on notifications to relatives through last Friday, it lists 11,564 killed, 54,302 wounded, 12,244 missing. President Truman today presented the Congressional Medal of Honor, this nation's highest decoration, to 4 Army infantrymen, heroes of the fighting which is now petering out in Korea. 27 veterans of Korea have received that pale blue ribbon and the 5-pointed star inscribed for valor, but only 7 have survived to accept it in person, as the 4 infantrymen did today. The ceremony was in the Rose Garden of the White House, and the 4 who were decorated are Corporal Einar Ingman, 21, of Tomahawk, Wisconsin. He wiped out 2 communist machine gun emplacements, routed 100 of the enemy. Master Sergeant Stanley T. Adams of Olathe, Kansas, he led 13 men in a night bayonet charge against 20 times as many of the enemy, despite the fact that he had a bullet through his leg and was knocked down 4 times by grenades. Captain Raymond Harvey of Pasadena, his company was pinned down by heavy fire. He braved gunfire and grenades to reach the first enemy machine gun nest and kill the crew, moved on to another and finished them, refused to leave the field despite his wounds. Captain Lewis Millett of South Dartmouth, Massachusetts, he led a bayonet charge into the face of heavy enemy fire, also insisted on staying until the battle was won despite his wounds. I've given only the bare bones of the case histories of these 4 men in the field, but getting a Congressional Medal of Honor is a big moment in a man's life. And you can imagine how Captain Raymond Harvey, for instance, must have felt this afternoon when he heard this recorded citation, read in the stentorian and extremely military voice of Major General William E. Bergen, Acting Adjutant General.
The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress approved March 3, 1863, has awarded in the name of the Congress the Medal of Honor to Captain Raymond Harvey, United States Army, with citation as follows. Captain Harvey, Company C, 17th Infantry Regiment, distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity above and beyond the call of duty in action on 9 March 1951 in the vicinity of Taemi-dong, Korea. When his company was pinned down by a barrage of automatic weapons fire from numerous well-entrenched emplacements imperiling accomplishment of its mission, Captain Harvey braved a hail of fire and exploding grenades to advance to the first enemy machine gun nest, killing its crew with grenades. Rushing to the edge of the next emplacement, he killed its crew with carbine fire. He then moved to the first platoon forward until it was again halted by a curtain of automatic fire from well-fortified hostile positions. Disregarding the hail of fire, he personally charged and neutralized a third emplacement. Miraculously escaping death from intense crossfire, Captain Harvey continued to lead the assault. Spotting an enemy pillbox well camouflaged by logs, he moved close enough to sweep the emplacement with carbine fire and throw grenades through the openings, annihilating its five occupants. Though wounded, he then turned to order the company forward, and suffering agonizing pain, he continued to direct the reduction of the remaining hostile positions, refusing evacuation until assured that the mission would be accomplished. Captain Harvey's valorous and intrepid actions served as an inspiration to his country, reflecting the utmost glory upon himself and upholding the heroic traditions of the military service. Signed, Harry S. Truman.
For Captain Raymond Harvey, that means, as an officer, he will become eligible for a monthly pension of $10 after he reaches the age of 65. So will Captain Lewis Millett for his citation. Corporal Engman and Sergeant Adams, as enlisted personnel, are entitled to an increase in pay of $2 per month, and each of them will receive salutes first from their officers when their pale blue ribbons are showing. Following the presentation today, President Truman said, it is soldiers like these four who will enable this country to win the Cold War and to keep the peace. He also told each of the men that, although people may not believe him, he'd rather have the Congressional Medal than the job he holds. The president also held a news conference today at which he expressed hope that Congress will come up with a workable price control legislation. More of that in a moment. He agreed with the State Department's denunciation of the Czech government for jailing Associated Press correspondent William Otis. He said he would welcome a visit to this country by Princess Elizabeth of England and her husband this fall, although he can't say yet whether they will be invited until he knows more details of their plans to visit Canada. Buckingham Palace says today there's a good chance the princess and the duke may visit the United States for a week at the end of October. The president's daughter Margaret sailed from Naples today after a 7 weeks tour of Europe. And an Englishman well known to many Americans died today. Lord Inverchapel, ambassador to Washington from 1946 to 1948 when he was Sir Archibald Clark Carr. Later knighted, he took the name of his Scottish ancestral place. Lord Inverchapel was 69. He had also been ambassador to Russia and China during World War II. It was in Moscow that he made diplomatic history by persuading Premier Stalin to take dinner at the British Embassy. Some other diplomats in the news today. Two members of our legation staff in Budapest were ordered expelled by the Hungarian government on the ground that they are persona non grata. Legation Secretary Albert Shearer, Jr. and Ruth Tryon, head of the embassy's information service, which has been closed at the Hungarians' request. Miss Tryon's secretary, Mary Eich, who's on home leave, also will not be permitted to return to Hungary. The Hungarian government has asserted the American diplomatic staff and its facilities were involved in espionage activities. Diplomats at The Hague today tried to compromise the oil dispute between Britain and Iran. The International Court of Justice suggested both sides agree on an interim plan to keep the oil coming out until a permanent decision can be reached. The British said they would be glad to comply if the Iranians would, but the Iranians said they would very much not, having said so even before the court undertook to compromise the argument. The British now indicate if Iran persists in its determination to seize full control of Anglo-Iranian's wells and refineries, the matter will be put before the United Nations Security Council, although it's not clear just what legalism might be employed in this step, since such an argument would not ordinarily be one for Security Council consideration. The International Court itself hasn't even decided if it has jurisdiction in the dispute, and its recommendation today, of course, is without the force of law. The administration today continued to punch hard for its plan of controls as Congress began debate on the bill, which will replace the old law, which expired on Saturday. President Truman made the plea referred to before, and economic stabilizer Johnston said if Congress passes a weak control bill, it might hit every American family with a dollar a day increase in the cost of living. He said it might be an economic Pearl Harbor. Representative Spence of Kentucky expressed concern at the lethargy in Congress over the control situation. Administration leaders were barely able to muster a required majority to begin the debate today, and Spence said, "It seems to take a Pearl Harbor to arouse our people, but it takes very little to lull them to sleep." There's a possibility today the government may take steps to cut down consumption of natural gas for home heating because of a shortage of steel to complete pipelines. Already, the Petroleum Administration has drafted a tentative order to bar the installation of new equipment using natural gas for heating homes and other buildings. The National Association of Manufacturers today presented Congress with a tax plan which was received with a minimum of enthusiasm and the assurance that it probably will not get very far. The NAM had proposed to balance the budget with what it called a consumption tax, an excise tax at the manufacturer's level, which would largely replace excises on most manufactured articles except food, liquor, and tobacco. The NAM thinks with other taxes it could bring in $18 billion and be much easier to collect than a retail sales tax. That NAM plan would not raise corporation taxes and limit increase on personal incomes to moderate ones, mostly in the lower income brackets. Congressmen generally are on record against that plan. Taft of Ohio says it seems to him the personal income tax is the only logical system. Milliken of Colorado says the proposed tax would be pyramided by the time it got to the consumer because, he said, middlemen would add their usual percentage markups to the factory price. But the NAM argued that competition would hold down retail prices, said the consumer would feel better if he got more earnings and then spent his money as he wished for manufactured articles. Frederick V. Field today was found guilty of contempt of court and sentenced to 90 days by federal judge Sylvester Ryan in New York for refusing to tell who put up the $80,000 bond for the four missing convicted Communist Party leaders. They were to have begun serving prison terms last Monday, but they jumped bail and disappeared. Field is secretary of the Civil Rights Congress Bail Fund, and he refused to talk on the ground that to disclose the names of contributors might incriminate him. The Congress, of course, is on the Attorney General's subversive list. The V in Field's name stands for Vanderbilt. He's a great-grandson of the Commodore who founded the family fortune, but Field turned his back on his background years ago. He now prefers to be known simply as Frederick V. Field. Governor Luther Youngdahl of Minnesota, a Republican, today accepted an offer by President Truman to be nominated as federal judge for the District of Columbia. If confirmed by the Senate, Youngdahl says he will resign as governor the 1st of September. His term normally would run till 1953, but if he's confirmed, he'd be succeeded as governor by C. Elmer Anderson, lieutenant governor now. In Berlin today, 25 persons, many of them children, drowned or were burned to death when a holiday excursion boat exploded and sank in the River Spree in the Russian sector. The boat was one of three used by a people's school to take hundreds of youngsters on vacation outings. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with a footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
American Automobile Association records show that battery failures were 37% higher last year than 1949. That means that almost 11 million failures were reported. One big reason for increasing battery failures is that a car battery today must work hard. We run radios with them and things like that. The result is a heavier drain on the battery. That's why the Amoco battery engineers designed the Amoco Super Glass battery to be much, much more powerful than original battery equipment. Amoco Super Glass batteries can soak up more power while the generator is charging. And then when an overload comes, they've got power in reserve. And this power doesn't leak away because the insulation in an Amoco Super Glass battery is made of spun glass, not wood or hard rubber. Your Amoco man has an Amoco Super Glass battery designed especially to fit your car's electrical needs. With it, you get a written warranty. Amoco's assurance that you can't buy a better battery anywhere at any price. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
3 years ago today, Great Britain began the experiment in socialized medicine. An Associated Press story on this anniversary says politicians of all parties, doctors, and patients agree the plan has come to stay. The only argument about it is how it's to be supervised and directed. The budget figure this year adds up to about $28 per patient. The only objection the Tories have is they could operate it a lot more economically. And that's the footnote to the news.
Next time you buy Amoco gas, get out and look at it pour from the hose into the tank. You notice immediately that it looks different from ordinary gas. It's crystal clear. That's because Amoco gas is all petroleum, with nothing added. It can leave no metallic deposit to contribute to engine wear. For Amoco gas and for other famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.